The Gospel of Luke, chapter number 6, and we have been preaching through the Gospel of Luke on Sunday mornings, and we're going to be looking at two verses from the middle of this chapter, but let's back up a little bit and begin reading in verse 27. Luke chapter 6, verse number 27, Jesus Christ is in the middle of His Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus Christ said, "But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And to him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, also offer the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee. And of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies and do good, and lend hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest. For He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again." Take your Bibles and turn with me to Luke chapter number 6 as we continue considering this theme of loving our enemies. To love one's enemies is a very unnatural thing to do. It is very natural to love the people who love you, to do good things to people who do good things to you, to speak nicely of those who speak nicely of you, and to pray for those who pray for you. That's very natural. But to love your enemies and to do good things for the very people that hate you, to speak nicely of those who hurt you, and to appeal to God for His blessings on those who despitefully use you, that's unnatural. That is of God. That is the nature of God. And stories about forgiveness of enemies after tragedy always grab our attention. It's been 10 years now since the news broke from nickel mines in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. It was 10 years ago, this upcoming October, when the tragedy occurred there in that community in an Amish one-room schoolhouse. Maybe you'll remember this picture of the schoolhouse that was on the news, the little one-room schoolhouse in Lancaster County. Here's another picture of the school building itself, where the tragedy occurred. And leave another picture of funerals after the tragic killing occurred. But you know what captured the attention of America beyond the tragedy that occurred in the lives of those Amish families as their children were murdered was the way the families reacted to the murderer, to the murderer's wife, and to the murderer's children. Maybe you remember back almost 10 years ago and remember the reports of how the people in the Amish community whose lives were totally turned upside down by the senseless actions of one man, how those people loved their enemies. It's been written about. Here's just a couple of the books. It's Think No Evil was a book that was written. Amish Grace was written and then became the backdrop of a feature film. The book Forgiven. A variety of books that were written in the aftermath of the way the families acted. The world couldn't understand it. The world was bizarre. It was bizarre to watch people love their enemies. To watch people reach out to the very ones who destroyed their lives. The world had a hard time understanding that and coping with that. It wasn't merely the horrible mass killing that got the attention of people in America. It was the unnatural reaction of the Amish people. I went back and read some of the things that came out at the time. Let me read a couple of quotes. Jack Meyer, a member of the Brethren community living near the Amish in Lancaster County, explained, quote, "I don't think there's anybody here that wants to do anything but forgive. And not only reach out to those who have suffered a loss in that way, but to reach out to the family of the man who committed these acts." One of the families that lost a child was the Roberts family, and Roberts was the man who'd murdered. It was one of the spokesmen for the family of the man who was behind the atrocity, said that an Amish neighbor comforted the family of the shooter, the killer, hours after the shooting and extended forgiveness to them. Just hours after it was still a crime scene. And families were going to the family of the murderer and offering forgiveness. Amish community members visited and comforted the widow of the murderer, the murderer's parents, and the murderer's parents-in-law. One Amish man held the murderer's father in his arms. The murderer's father was sobbing, reportedly for an hour. The Amish man held the father of the murderer in his arms as he sobbed for an hour, trying to comfort the family of the murderer. The Amish have also set up a charitable fund for the family of the member. The ones who haven't even had the funeral yet for their children set up a charitable fund to raise money for the family of the murderer. About 30 members of the Amish community attended the murderer's funeral. And the murderer's widow was one of the few outsiders invited to the funeral of the victims. The murderer's wife wrote an open letter to her Amish neighbors thanking them for their forgiveness, grace, and mercy. She wrote, and I quote, "Your love for our family has helped to provide the healing we so desperately needed. Gifts you've given have touched our hearts in a way no words can describe. Your compassion has reached beyond our family, beyond our community, and is changing our world. And for this, we sincerely thank you. Another gentleman who is a scholar of the Amish way of life, Donald Craybill, said, he noted that to the Amish, letting go of grudges is deeply rooted in their culture. Letting go of grudges is deeply rooted in the Amish culture, which remembers forgiving martyrs, including Dirk Willems, one of the famous Anabaptist martyrs. You may remember his story, how he had escaped the persecutors that were going to put him to death. And in his escape, his persecutor fell through ice and was going to drown. And he went back and he rescued his persecutor. And then his persecutor put him back in jail. And then he was burnt at the stake. They explained that the Amish willingness to forgo vengeance does not undo the tragedy or pardon the wrong, but rather constitutes a first step towards a future that is more hopeful. Another report said, hours after learning about what Charles Roberts had done, a contingent of the grieving Amish came to visit Roberts' widow. She told the story about how she saw a group of Amish come up to their home. Of course, she didn't know why they were there. And her dad went out and talked to the Amish men. She could tell by the way they acted that they weren't there maliciously. When her dad came back in the house, her dad told her they came to let us know they'd forgiven your husband and that they care about what you're going through right now. And they care about what your two children who just lost their dad are going through right now. And they want you to know that they care about you. Their children hadn't been buried yet. And they were letting the murderer know, murderer's family know, that they cared about what they were going through. Remarkable story of loving your enemies. She said later, they were concerned about me and concerned about our kids and wanted us to know that they supported our family. And it didn't end there. When her family was besieged by media en route to bury her husband, now stop and imagine this in your mind. She's on her way to the funeral for her husband, the murderer. The media show up in mass. And the Amish, who you probably know, do not like their pictures being taken. Do not like the media. They crowded in between the widow of the murderer of their children and the media to protect the widow and her family from the media so that they couldn't film and interrupt the proceedings. Even though they don't like their pictures taken, the members of the community placed themselves directly in front of the news cameras to shield the family. They turned their backs to the cameras so the only pictures that could be taken were of them and not our family. And it was amazing to me that they would choose to do that for us. It was amazing. It was one of those moments during the week where my breath was taken away, not because of the evil, but because of the love. Love your enemies. In the years to follow that tragedy, the families that lost children gave testimony of how they had to forgive over and over and over again. Forgiveness is not clinical. It's not cut and dry. It's not, I forgive you, and it never pops up in my heart again. It's not easy. They said they had to forgive over and over and over and over again, as they would wrestle in their hearts with what had been done to their families. Jesus Christ said, love your enemies. If you're going to be on my team, Jesus says, if our team is going to win the war, win the game, win the battle, if my team is going to be effective, the members of my team must learn how to love their enemies, to do acts of kindness to those who hate them, to speak well of those who curse them, to appeal to God for the well-being of those who despitefully use them. Because that's what earns us credibility. That's what proves that we're genuine children of God. That our lives have been transformed by the miracle of salvation. That the Holy Spirit lives inside of us. That He has so changed our lives that we don't just love the people that love us. We love the people that hate us. We don't just speak nice to the people who speak nice to us. We speak nice to the people who curse us. We are so different that it attracts the attention of a world that doesn't understand God. And when they see someone who's been changed and shaped into the conformity of God's character, it gets their attention. It earns us credibility. It makes our gospel witness believable. It is a part of evangelizing the world. It's what the team has to become fishers of men, as Jesus told these hand-picked disciples as the reason why He was putting them on His team, because we have a world to influence for Jesus Christ. How about you? Have you been transformed by salvation? Are you a new creation in Christ Jesus? Are you different because the Holy Spirit lives inside of you? Could you love your child's murderer? And could you start a fund to raise money for his children? And could you visit his widow and say, we know what you're going through. We want you to know that we don't hold any grudges against you or your husband or your family. Let me ask it another way. Can you be Christian in a world of hate? Can you love your enemies? Well, that's what this Sermon on the Mount is all about. You say, that's hard. By the way, here's something more, a little bit more up to date, but it's not as, didn't catch the news quite as much. Just a few months ago, less than a year ago, down in Charleston, South Carolina, church prayer meeting. Someone walks into prayer meeting and welcomed, allowed to sit and enjoy the Bible study and the prayer meeting together. And at the end of the prayer meeting, the senseless tragedy that occurred. And this one that performed the atrocities, family members and church members told him that they forgave him for what he had done to their family. That they didn't hold that against him and judge him for that. Leave that to the government. By the way, there's self-defense is protecting to keep a tragedy from happening. Loving your enemies is what you do after the tragedy occurs. It's not a contradiction to self-defense. It's not a statement against self-defense. It's what you do after self-defense didn't work. It's your heart attitude towards people. You say, that's hard. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. But you see at the top of your little worksheet there somewhere, the bluff, bottom line up front, hard things are worth it. Hard things are worthwhile. You see, in this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus Christ is not telling us the easy way to live the life, the easy way to live Christianity. What He's telling us is the impossible behavior of somebody who doesn't know God that becomes possible in the lives of those who do know God. If you know God, if God lives in you, then it's possible to live this kind of a life. Here are the nine people that were lives tragically snuffed out at the end of that prayer meeting. The pastor and eight church members senselessly killed. And then the individual who committed the crime. Daily News said, "We forgive you. Hate won't win." Amazing. Amazing. Can I be Christian and be effective in world evangelism? Well, that's the question that the Sermon on the Mount keeps poking us with as we read and study the Sermon on the Mount. You see, what's amazing, I was working last night. You know, I have always read the Sermon on the Mount as if it were a whole bunch of unrelated instructions, kind of maybe from a whole day of Jesus' teaching that Luke and Matthew, under the inspiration of God, picked little pieces of the sermon, kind of lumped them all together and gave us a condensed version. I've never appreciated the flow of the Sermon on the Mount until going through the Sermon on the Mount with you on Sunday mornings. And I'm amazed. I continue to be amazed at the interwoven intricacy of what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. And Jesus Christ is bringing to our attention the fact that some people live as reactionary, and that's normal for the world. Someone loves me, I react by giving them what they gave me. Someone hates me, I react by giving them what they gave me. So I love the one that loves me, I hate the one that hates me. You do me good, I'll do good to you. You do me bad, watch your back, because I'll be around. You curse me, and I've got some things to say about you. You despitefully use me, and I'm going to get on my knees and pray for you. I'm going to pray the judgment of God down on your family. I will give you in kind to what you give me. And so my life, the life of the average unsaved person, the life of the world is a life of reaction. We give back what we get. We don't like the way someone treats us, so we treat them the same way back. And that's the life that's normal. That's normal human experience, normal human living. But Jesus Christ is challenging His team. He's saying, that won't do. You live like the unsaved live. You live like the world lives. We'll never get the world evangelized. No one will ever believe our message. But if you will live as an instigator instead of a reactor, if you will give somebody good in spite of the fact that they have already done bad to you, if you will give them good, you will instigate future good to come back to you. Not as a reactor giving back the kind of treatment I've received, but instigating good by giving people what they've never given me. Giving them what I would want someone to give me. And so I will love them when they are my enemies. And I will in that way instigate them loving in return. I will live my life not as a reactor dishing out what I've received. I will live my life as an instigator, instigating love and kind words and good deeds and genuine praying for people's well-being. I will instigate good things even though I've not received any of that from the people that I am trying to instigate genuine Christian reality to. And they realize that there's something different about that real, genuine, real deal person who calls himself a Christian. There's something different and real and genuine about this person who loves me when I hate them, who does good for me when I do bad to them, who speaks nice of me when I curse them, who prays for my well-being when I use them, abuse them. There's something about this person I can't get off my mind. And we earn credibility. And we earn a hearing for what made me this way. This is not me. You know what me is? You do me wrong and you better watch your back, buddy. Because I have a long memory. And you will see my face again. That's me. You know what's not me? To love that person. And buy them a gift. Speak well of them. Pray for them. Then where does that come from? It comes from God and His changing of my life. Let me ask you a question. Think of your own life. Are you more apt to give people what they give you? Are you more apt to dish it out in payback for what you've been, how you've been treated? If so, there's a possibility you're not saved. Because that's the bottom line characteristic of a lost person. Jesus said, the sinners love those who love them. The sinners do good to those who do good to them. The sinners. He's saying the unsaved, the lost, that's how they live. If that's how you live, that's a pretty good indication you're probably not saved. Or if you are saved, you are so immature in your Christian experience that you're still sucking bottles and eating Pablum. You have never matured to where the character of God is being reflected in your life when you are treated hatefully and horribly by people who are around you. That's the time where we earn credibility as a Christian, as a changed individual. Now, is it worth it? Is it worth it to love your enemies? Is it worth it to buy gifts for those who do bad things to you? Is it worth it to speak well of the people who curse you? Is it worth it to live out what Christ is teaching on the Sermon on the Mount? What are the perks? I mean, what comes back as a result of this kind of giving out of life? Well, let me show you. Let me show you what the two perks are. We've already looked at one of them, so let me just show it to you. He comes down to verse number 35. Verse number 35, he repeats himself. He says, but love your enemies, do good, lend, hoping for nothing again. Your reward, two perks. Your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest. For he is kind to the unthankful and the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Perk number one is that you are a reflection of God. You are a reflection. You are manifesting that God is your Father. You're manifesting that God has changed your life. And we preached a message on the kindness of God and how when kindness comes out of your life on the worst day, when you're treated the worst by your people around you and you come out with kindness, that is a manifestation that you have been changed by God. That's a good perk. That's a good perk to be called a Christ-like one, not in name only, but in action. To be a manifestation of the kindness and mercy of God in a hateful world. That is a great perk. But the second perk is the one I want you to focus just for a couple of moments on. The second perk we haven't looked at yet. Verse number 35 says, and it lists it first, but I've held it for a second. He said, and your reward shall be great. And your reward shall be great. I want to challenge you to understand that the perk for being loving to your enemy is that you will be rewarded by your fellow man. Now the reward, let me just ask the question, is this rewarded by God? Is this God will reward me? Well, if you come down to the verse number 38, given it shall be given you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, shall what? What's the next word? Shall, who's going to give it into your bosom? Shall men give into your bosom? This is talking about the rewards on this earth from your fellow man. In other words, there's a perk for loving your enemies. There's a perk for doing good to those who do you bad. The first perk is that you have manifested the character of God to a lost and a dying world. But the second perk is you're going to be rewarded by human beings. We call that the law of sowing and reaping. You reap what you sow. You give people hate for hate. You know what you're going to reap? You're going to reap hate for hate. You give people mean behavior because that's how they treated you, and that's, you're going to get more of that back from people. You're going to reap what you sow. You live according to the way the world lives, and you're going to get more of that kind of activity in your life. But there is a reward. The reward is that if you will do good to your enemies, you're going to be rewarded. You see, think about it on the other end. Let me use Troy for a moment. Let's pretend like I'll turn it around. I'll make you the good guy. Okay, I'll be the bad guy. Okay, Troy's saved. Troy's saved, and I'm lost. So Troy comes along, and I do something really bad to him. So you know what he does? Well, he's not a real good saved person. So he does real bad. He does back. He gets even with me. So you know what I do? I do bad back to him. You know why? Because from my perspective as an unsaved person, I give out what I get. If I do him wrong and he does me wrong back, what did I get? I got wrong. So what am I going to do? I'm going to give him more wrong back. I'm going to give him more what I got. And so what's he get? He gets more wrong and more wrong and more wrong and more wrong. But maybe Troy is matured. Maybe he's a good Christian. And so I come along and I really do him dirty. Stick him in the back. And he goes out and buys me a gift. He sends me a card and tells me he's praying for me, that God will bless my family. He heard that one of the kids was sick. Now, what have I received from Troy? I've received love. What do I as an unsaved person do? I give back what I get, right? That's how I live. I'm a reactionary. I give what I get. So what did I get from Troy? I got love. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to think twice before I stick him in the back again. In fact, I'm more likely to do something nice to him. So what did he get? He got rewarded. Who did he get rewarded from? He got rewarded from me. He got rewarded from me. Why did he get rewarded from me? Because he did the hard thing. He loved his enemy. And when he gave me love, I gave him back in kind what I got. Which means he got something better than what he would have got. So he's rewarded for what he did. Do you understand that one of the perks in life is that you will get back what you give from the unsaved? And if you will give them back love for their hate, you will get back more love from humanity. If you give kindness for rudeness, you will get back more kindness from humanity. You will get back a reward because you did the hard thing and you instigated good behavior when it was hard to do. And when you instigated good behavior in place of bad behavior, you reap what you sow and you get some back. Now, with that in mind, look at these four things and I'll close. Here's the four places where this becomes real. Verse 37, judge not and ye shall not be judged. This is not talking about discernment. This is not talking about judicial action. This is talking about in your personal dealings with other people, don't be a critical, nitpicky person who's always down on people. Don't be judgmental and critical and harsh and fault-finding. And in the tense, it's assuming an action that's already in progress. So we might say it this way, stop judging. And then you won't be judged. If you will stop being so critical, people will stop being critical with you. If you'll stop being so fault-finding, nitpicking with people will stop being so nitpicky with you. You will be rewarded by the behavior you instigate when you instigate good behavior in the place of bad behavior that you received. So he says, do you want people to not find you fault-finding? Do you want people to not be critical with you? Do you want people to not be harsh with you? Then when they treat you that way, love them. when they treat you that way, buy them a gift. When they treat you that way, send them a card and tell them you're praying for the need they have in their family. When they are harsh and critical and nitpicky and ornery and judgmental towards you, don't give them back what you got from them. You're no better than a lost person. That's the way lost people live. They give back what they get. But if you want people to be kind to you, then you be kind to the judgmental, critical, harsh person. And you will be instigating. You will be wanting to reap down the road in that relationship what you've sown. Be careful what you sow, because you'll reap it one day. This is the reward system from God. Look at the second one. Judge not that you be not judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. By the way, the first two are negative. Judge not, condemn not. And then he gives two positives, forgive and give. Two negatives and two positives. And all of them assume the actions going on, or at least the two negatives assume the actions going on. Condemning is the end of the road from judging. If you are a judgmental, nitpicky, harsh, critical, always pointing out what they did wrong, always down on somebody because of the way they didn't do what you wanted them to do, they did what you didn't want them to do, so you're harsh, you're nitpicky, you're critical, you're fault-finding, you know what the end of that road is? You condemn them. You're bad. You're a bad person. And you pass condemnation on them. And God says, you want people to condemn you? You want people to look for every little thing you do wrong? You want people to be harsh with you and nitpicky with you and fault-finding with you and finally say, you're a bad person? Then just give them back what they give you. And then you'll reap what you sow. And then they'll reap what they sow. And then you'll reap what you sow. And then they'll reap what they sow. And you know what? You'll both be nitpicky, harsh, critical, condemning people. Because that's the way the world goes. Introduce a Christian who will love their enemies and do good to those that hate them and speak nice about those who curse them and pray for God's blessing on those that despitefully use them. And the person that does that is instigating a behavior pattern that is going to reward them with more kindness from people. Isn't it amazing? You smile, people smile back at you. You're kind and people are kind back at you. You help and people help you. That's what Jesus is saying. There's a reward. It's a perk. It's a perk for loving your enemies. You'll be rewarded by people. So don't be critical, harsh. Don't come to the end of it and condemn them. But notice the next verse 37 says, and forgive. Forgive. When a mean-spirited person won't forgive you, when they wrote it down in their black book and it's in the back of their mind for the rest of their lives and you'll never be able to escape it, the grudge will be held forever and they'll never let you forget what you did. Well, you got a choice. You can treat them that way back, just like unsaved people do, to guarantee that they're going to treat you that way back, and then you can treat them back that way again, and then that'll guarantee they're going to treat you back that way again. Or you can instigate love, and you can forgive them, like the Amish families did to the Roberts family. That doesn't bring my baby back. That doesn't bring my 10-year-old girl back. That doesn't put something to fill up the hole that you caused in my heart for the rest of my life. That won't fix what you've done. But it's what Christ would do. That's what I must learn how to do. Because that's what earns me the credibility as a Christian. I'll forgive you for what you've done. And you know something? If you live a life not holding grudges, forgiving people for what they do to you, you know, the strange thing happens. You get rewarded. People will forgive you when you mess up. If you forgive, you will be forgiven. And then there's a final one. Give. Some people are stingy. You can be dying of hunger and they'll sit there and eat their fried chicken and just watch you die. And if somebody is that way towards you and you don't die and you have the opportunity to meet somebody else who has a need and you say, I'm going to be stingy because that's what I've gotten. People have given me the raw end of the deal. People have never given me to meet my need. Everyone's been stingy to me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be stingy back. I'm going to hold on to all I got and I'm never going to share it with anybody. Guess what? You're locking yourself into a pattern to where people are always going to be stingy with you. But on the other hand, if after someone has been really stingy with you, you take what little bit you've got and you share it with somebody who has a need, you'll get rewarded. What will the reward be? Well, the reward will be this. It shall be given unto you. It shall be given unto you. And then he gives an amazing picture. A word picture, he pictures somebody who had been very common in the Bible era. Not so common today, but very common then, because they dealt with agriculture, with grains and buying and selling grains. And so someone selling grains, they would get their container, that they're going to sell this container of grain. So they get this container between their knees and they would fill it up to about 3/4 of the way full. And then history tells us they would take it and they would shake it. Shake it. Shake it. And you know what happens when they shake it? The grain kind of gets packed in a little bit tighter so they can put some more grain in it. And they shake it. They shake it. They shake it. And it kind of settles into all the crevices. Not like today when you buy a box of cereal. By the time you get it home, you open the box and it's halfway gone. No, they didn't do that back then. They shook it and they shook it. And then when they got to where they shook it and no more would shake down, then they would get up on above it and they would press it down and press it down. Put some more in and press it down. Put some more in and press it down. And then when they got the container where it was all shook in and all pressed in and they couldn't get any more in, then they would heap it up and build a cone above the top of the container. And that was called a good measure. A good measure. You got your money's worth. You got a good measure. And God said, let me tell you something. You be stingy if you want. You'll always have people be stingy with you. But if you live the kind of a life that when people do you wrong, when people hate you, when people talk evil about you, and you find out they have a need, and you give to them to meet their need, you give of your resources to take care of your enemy, to buy something for the person that's been slandering you at work. And you do good. And you give. God says, I'll reward you. And I'll reward you through other human beings. Other human beings will give to you a good measure. Because there are perks in doing right. You'll be able to reflect that you're the child of God. Because you couldn't have lived that kind of life if you weren't saved. And you will be rewarded. People won't be as nitpicky. People won't be as apt to condemn you. People won't be as apt to hold grudges against you. People won't be as apt to overlook your needs and not help you. Because you have lived the ethic of loving your enemies. Isn't that amazing? Wow. How effective would our gospel witness be if the world saw in every Christian that kind of life? It would earn credibility to our claim that the blood of Jesus Christ is powerful enough to wash away all sin and change your very life.